Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the YouTube home for BamaOnline.com. Travis Ryer, Senior Analyst for BOL, alongside my partner, Charlie Potter, Senior Writer for us there at BOL. It is a Wednesday, February the 21st, 2024. Welcome back, Potter. This is 2 weeks in a row now. This is officially a streak with you here on the program.
Yeah, I would like to say it's because things are slowing down, but that hasn't really been the case. These past 2 days have been a blitzkrieg with news and coaching stuff, availabilities. We heard from Nick Saban, his first public comments for the first time since he retired on Monday night. So it's been a busy week, but it's good to be back.
Yeah, you wonder if Nick Saban still resonates in retirement. You were in Birmingham for that impromptu media opportunity, which thought it was interesting, some of the things that you had to say about how that came together and maybe the level of surprise for Saban that he was thrust back in front of a media contingent, but the guy just is going to resonate for a long time to come, because right there at our YouTube channel for BamaOnline.com, in fact, if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, I would certainly encourage you to do that right now. Like, subscribe, turn on those notifications. You had video footage of Nick Saban's comments in Birmingham. And when you go look at the view numbers for that video right now, it's probably of our last four or five shows or videos here on the channel. It's right there at the top in terms of views. So anytime this guy still gets in front of a camera, it's going to attract a lot of attention.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I think he was probably made aware of it, but he walked in and I don't think he was just that jazzed when he saw what was happening, but he looks good. I'll say that. He walked in, he's got a good tan, he's got a fresh cut. He looks healthy and happy, and that's really important. But no, he was good with his time, and he really didn't have that much of a time constraint, to be honest. You know, no media relations people were there. I think Cedric was pulling some Josh Maxson duty, which was a little funny. Miss Terry had to come in and tell him to wrap it up. So, but no, he was good. He talked about retirement. He talked about Kalen DeBoer, and his comments weren't that surprising. He's talked about trying to stay at arm's length with the new staff. He doesn't want them to feel like he's looking over their shoulder, which I think, given someone like Nick Saban, I think Kalen DeBoer's embraced it the way he should. I think he's sought advice as much as he can. But Nick Saban wants him to make this his program. You know, he left it in great, great shape, but it's time for a new coach to take over. I think that's kind of the approach that Saban's taken.
You also referenced Kalen DeBoer making the radio rounds here in the last 24 to 48 hours between the coaching staff, his offense moving forward, and even some comments about an elite incoming wide receiver in Ryan Williams, made a few headlines of his own.
Yeah. Well, we still, outside of that introductory press conference, haven't talked to him as a local beat yet. You know, we got spring practice coming up in a couple weeks. That's going to change in a hurry. But yeah, he's made several appearances, whether it be national or local. And this week was kind of the local trail with going on with Cole Kublik and Greg McElroy in Birmingham in the morning. Thought that was a really good call.
I think I got muted there for a second. But with Ryan Williams, it's a situation where it's his first comment since he signed. There was no signing day press conference because, I mean, my man Kalen's been busy. But you're talking about just the electric athlete that Ryan is, that comes as no surprise. He says he can do it all on the field. And he's a guy that when he gets on campus is certainly poised to make an impact. But whether it be these radio opportunities or heck, even press releases. We've gotten some coaching news from Alabama finally in terms of announcements. Kalen's had some good quotes about those guys coming in, and you know, this thing's starting to come together here in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, there's been some rumblings too in the last 24 hours about a potential wide receiver pairing of Ryan Williams and Caleb Odom, who came to Tuscaloosa as an early enrollee, outstanding receiver, whether it was as a wide receiver at the high school level or a guy that you could move inside and utilize in some ways like a tight end. Sounds like this thing might be, at least to start with, the big man working more as a wide receiver. We've seen some indications of that anyway. You're muted again.
I don't know what's going on with my AirPods. Sorry. With Caleb Odom, I think he's a guy that when he signed, people were interested. What's he going to do? Where's he going to line up? How's he going to look in this offense? And I think his social media change, the way he's reacted to the coaching announcements, it's kind of a precursor or maybe a preview of what to expect in the spring. I think he can still certainly, you know, see some time at tight end. The brief time that we saw them out in California, you know, he was working with the tight ends before the Rose Bowl, and he didn't look out of place there. He's a little thinner, but so was a guy like Amari Nyblack, and we saw what he was able to do as an offensive weapon. And I think, you know, those guys are the definition of mismatches at that position. But I think it says a lot about Caleb Odom as a athlete that he's able to come in and, you know, get a look at wide receiver almost specifically. Or exclusively. So we'll see what happens. I think that's a good question for maybe the second, third day of spring ball. But it'll be interesting to see how he's using this offense and what you know, Jamarcus Shepherd and Kalen DeBoer and Nick Sheridan can do with a guy like that.
Yeah, he's a guy that when you go look at his high school tape, he was pretty much a wide receiver in high school, or at least a lot of his clips. That's the way it appeared. So may not be a stretch to see a big target like that lined up out wide on a pretty consistent basis. So what we're going to get in today, Charlie, is our top five players on the Alabama football roster as it sits today, I guess, because something else we heard from Kalen DeBoer in the last day or so is that still got some spots available as far as potential scholarships, if they're needed down the road, when you think about maybe that transfer portal window in April. But as it sits right now, the way this Alabama roster is constructed, we will attempt to count them down with our own individual top fives from 5 to 1. We'll go with that, Charlie. So with that, I'm going to ask you for your five-hole guy right now on this Alabama roster.
Yeah, it was tough to kind of put them in order. I think the top four are pretty clear, or at least like you look at the guys that have been leaders in this change. So for me, like the five spot was kind of like a wild card. I went back and forth on several. I thought of a guy like Justice Hayes. I think Justice is a guy that is going to have a big role in this offense. I think he can have a breakout year this fall. I think the guys on the defensive side of the ball, like Jihad Campbell, Tim Keenan, I think they were able to really get their feet wet this past season and make huge impacts. But I do think, though, I'm going to go, hopefully to your delight, go with a guy like James Burnett, man, coming back as a returning starter.
Wow, I love it.
Yeah, a guy that could be an All-American candidate. I really think so this past year, or this upcoming year, after what he was able to do last year, finishing fifth in the nation in punting. With a new offense, even though it's one that's proven, with new players learning that offense, I think a very good weapon for that side of the ball is a dangerous punter. And I think James Burnham's gotten better and better over the course of his career. And for me right now, I'm looking more of like potential All-American candidates. I think he's maybe at the top of the list, but when you look at the guys ahead of him that I have to go number five.
There you go. I love it. I always love the specialists getting some love. You know that. And yeah. I agree. If you're talking about individual accolades and the potential for that for guys on this roster right now, we talked about this before. James Burnup's probably one of those guys. So James Burnup in the five spot for Charlie Potter. I went with an interior offensive lineman at number five. And I wouldn't be surprised if you have one of these guys on your list at some point here coming up. But the surprise with mine might be that it's actually Jaden Roberts that I have here in the five hole. Instead of Tyler Booker, instead of Parker Brailsford coming in from Washington, I won't be surprised if at some point both of those guys are on a list like this and very easily could have been included. But I tried to keep the transfers out of it for now, for the most part, until we can really get a better idea. We're going to make this sort of a living list where it can change and evolve as we revisit it, you and I, as we get into spring practice and beyond. But for now, man, not just because Jaden Roberts performed at a very high level as the 2023 season moved along, but how he goes about his business is what I like. He is a culture setter. He is a intensity and physicality setter. And so give me the big offensive guard, Jaden Roberts. And Charlie, I guess it could get interesting in terms of how some of the versatility of some of these guys plays into the five that we'll eventually see for Alabama up front, because could play into that offensive tackle position too. Not maybe specifically Jaden, but just some of the guys they have to work with.
No doubt. I mean, I think that leads into who I have at number four. You kind of alluded to it. I went Tyler Booker here just because he's a proven player. He's been a leader even before the coaching change, but very vocal after Nick Saban decided to retire. But Tyler's a hell of a player. He's been that way since he was a true freshman, and he started to rotate with guys like Javian Cohen and Emil Ekior. But I do think it's interesting. I think that's why I have him at four, because right now he's a guard, but Alabama really needs offensive tackle help. Maybe he's a guy in the spring that gets a look at that because they don't have a ton of depth there. I don't know if that'll be the case. That remains to be seen. But it's certainly, I think, a possibility. He has some tackle background coming from high school. But, no, I just think the way that, you know, the consistency in which he plays with, and, again, that leadership is important. And for me, the top criteria that I thought about was leaders, you know, past production and potential for All-American status this year. And for me, when you look at that offensive line, I think Tyler Booker has to top that list.
Yeah, if there's something I want to see more of maybe from Tyler Booker, it's what you just talked about and what they're doing right now and what we've seen on our social media timelines here in the last few days. Winter workouts, that's really where a lot of that starts. That's where I think Tyler could probably make the biggest strides, not just intangibly, but tangibly for himself in improving and taking another step as an already really good player. I went with Malachi Moore at number four because I think obviously the experience and what you have in terms of documented production from Malachi in the past, but intangibly, you just talked about it, I think, with Tyler Booker. He's going to need to be that sort of glue guy. He's going to need to be that consummate leader on the back end of a defense that is undergoing a lot of change. And not just that, what he can provide at multiple spots, as we've seen in the past. Now, it'll be interesting to see what Kane Womack's approach to that star position or what used to be the star position is moving forward. It may not be as much of a seamless fit for a guy like Malachi Moore. Maybe it will be, but I want Malachi Moore at four. What about number three, Charlie? Who you got there?
Yeah, these are perfect segues because I went Malachi at three because you look at what, you know, the defensive backfield lost. It lost a ton, but Malachi is that constant there. And I like what you said, just the leadership that he can provide in the back end. There's going to be a ton of young guys, a lot of new guys, and Malachi is going to be essentially another coach on the field. You have Mo Linguist coming in. You have Colin Hitchler. But to have a guy like Malachi that's been in this program, even though he's also learning a new defensive scheme, I think it's invaluable for those young guys just to have the kind of a voice of reason out there, whether at practice or in games. That steadying voice out there, I think, is really big. And Malachi played really well this past year. Mm-hmm. I think he's someone that's dealt with some adversity. He had a tremendous freshman season, dealt with some injuries, but then last year, he was really good. I think he can be that again this year. And like you said, he can play a bunch of different roles. He can be a safety in the back end. He can play more in the box, closer to the line of scrimmage in the slot. So we'll see what happens because, you know, Alabama doesn't have a ton of experience otherwise in that defensive backfield. But I mean, 13 is going to be on the field, and if not every snap, damn near every one of them. So for me, with what they lose in the defensive backfield and just Malachi's experience, he's number three.
Absolute building block. not just for that secondary, but really for that defense in general. And that kind of led me into the next couple of guys that I kind of struggled with in this order of 2 through 4. I really had Malachi as high as 2 at one point as I juggled these guys. But at number 3, I went Jahad Campbell. I think in this defense with Kane Womack, the 2 inside linebackers are going to be out there a ton. I don't know if we're going to see as much dime in this defense as we've seen previously with, say, Nick Saban and the coordinators that he had on that side of the ball. But I think Jahad Campbell, because of his versatility and his ability to play in space, going to be a really nice fit for this defense. You can also do some things with him from a pressure perspective, pass rush, those type of things. I went Jahad Campbell, number 3, kind of defense heavy here on these last couple of picks for me. What about you, Charlie, at number 2 on our list?
Yeah, again, we're setting each other up. I didn't go Jahad, but I went Deontay just because, like what you said, I think these inside backers are going to flourish in this defense. They're going to have a lot of opportunities. They're going to be on the field. And for Deontay, the big thing with him is, you know, can he stay healthy? Because I think we saw he's a damn good football player, but, you know, he dealt with some ankle issues this past year, and that slowed him down a little bit. I don't think he was 100%. Toward the end of the regular season. But I think he's a guy that with some time to heal up, if he can learn this defense, he's going to be the signal caller. You know, that was his role this past year. You know, he was groomed for that early on in his career with guys like Henry Toa and Jalen Moody still on the roster. But I think Deontay, with the guys that I've picked so far outside of Burnham, and James might be doing it too. I don't know. We've just seen the other 4 kind of more publicly. You know, he's been a guy that's been out in front rallying the troops around this new coaching staff. And I think that's important. But I think with his play on the field and with this new defense, he's a guy that's going to rack up a ton of tackles. I think he can be disruptive, create negative plays. We've seen him, you know, make plays from an interception and a forced fumble standpoint. I think he's a guy that can be, you know, in the mix for All-American and maybe even a Butkus Award at the end of this coming season. So I went Deontay number 2 because, you know, he's a quarterback of that defense right now. And, yeah, I think with the guys learning that new scheme, he's going to be very, very important.
Yeah, Deontay's injury history was one of the reasons why I flirted with Malachi as high as 2. Even Jahad Campbell I thought about ahead of Deontay Lawson at no fault of his own, again, because of the health issues. But you're right. If he stays healthy over the course of 12, 13, 15 games, he is certainly All-American capable of that type of season in this defense in 2024. So I went with the signal caller as well, Deontay Lawson. I have a feeling we may have the same guy in the top spot, but maybe you'll surprise me, Charlie. So go ahead, give me the top guy right now as we sit here in late February among the top 5 players on Alabama's football roster.
I had him at number 5, so I'm assuming you have Burnham at number 1. but no, I mean, I went Jalen Milroe. You know, the guy finished 6th in the Heisman Trophy voting. He was a dynamic athlete. He's really emerged as a leader. I think Jalen's mature. He's been mature throughout this process. He said all the right things. And I think when you have Kalen DeBoer coming in, and now we know that Nick Sheridan is going to be his quarterback's coach. I think if Jalen can really lock in this offseason, he can be a hell of a football player this fall. I think if he can continue to take those steps as a passer, you know, continue to learn how to read the defenses and flourish in this offense. You know, we saw what a guy like Michael Penix was able to do. I think he could be really, really special this fall. I think there's going to be competition in the spring. It's a new coaching staff. You essentially have a clean slate, but you also have the film that's out there. I think that, you know, Ty Simpson coming back, Austin Mack coming in, hell, even Dylan Lonergan, it's going to be interesting. But, you know, Jalen started 13 games this past season, played really well. I think he's a guy that if he can continue to stack what he was able to do as a passer on top of what he's able to do athletically as a runner, he can be really dangerous in this offense. So, you know, quarterback is super important, as we know. Just look at what the Super Bowl showed with Patrick Mahomes winning another one. So it's tough for me not to go there. But I do think with Jalen, one of the big things is just how he's really emerged as a leader on this team. And I think that's going to be really important this fall.
Yeah, that gets overlooked or discounted at least by outsiders, because they're not there every day, and they don't understand that bond and that sense that a player like Jalen Milroe at his position is able to develop with everyone around him. That being said, we've heard from Kalen DeBoer in the last day or so about what he wants from the quarterback position. And I think there's going to have to be a coming together of the adaptability and the willingness to adjust, as we've heard from Kalen DeBoer. And at the same time, it's going to be on Jalen to take another step or two as a passing quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I obviously agree with you in terms of competition. I think there's a lot of guys in that room right now that are thrilled with this offense that's coming in with Kalen DeBoer. I think Jalen Milroe's right there with him, because really what we've heard from Jalen and seen from Jalen in the past is that his preference is to stand in there and make decisions and make throws. But there's going to have to be an uptick in terms of efficiency. And look, completion percentage was great a year ago, but you can't take 40 plus sacks. Not all of those were on Jalen. I get it. But again, I go back to Washington's low sack numbers from a year ago. And a lot of that had to do with familiarity. Michael Penix had the advantage of having been in that offense for a long, long time. So a lot of the things I think became secondary for him, became more second nature for him, became more instinctive for him. And I think that's where you need to hopefully get with Jalen here in a relatively quick period of time. But yeah, for now, I don't know how you don't have Jalen Milroe at the top of a list like this. Again, it's a living list. It's going to change perhaps as we move through spring practice, get more into the summer months in advance of the season. Now, as far as others that maybe just missed the cut for you with this top five, and I think this is interesting too, because sometimes an individual list like this doesn't coincide with position group strength, right? I mean, we didn't have a wide receiver on our list here, but I think we both agree that it's very likely that wide receiver will be a strength for this team. Same thing for the running back position. What about that in terms of maybe guys that just missed out?
Yeah, I mentioned Justice Haynes. I thought long and hard about him at number five, just because we saw what he was able to do with a little bit of an extended role in the Rose Bowl. He looked really good against Michigan. I thought they maybe should have gone to him a little bit more. Wide receiver, my mind always goes to Kendrick Law, just because he's that Swiss Army knife. And I think with a guy like Kalen DeBoer, who's more of an offensive-minded coach, he's going to figure out ways to get him involved. Whether he's lined up in the backfield, kind of the H-back role, split out wide in the slot. I mean, Kendrick can be all over the field. And offensively, that's just kind of where my mind went. I think you could go other ways and look at a guy like Jeremy Bernard coming in from Washington. He knows his offense. I think he can, you know, potentially be wide receiver one for Alabama if it needs him to be this fall. And then do you want to talk about some of your offensive guys, or do you want me to roll right into the defensive guys I thought about?
Yeah, I had Kendrick Law on my list for a while. I had Kendrick as high as four on this list, and I finally moved on from him. But again, if we're just talking about all around football players, between what he can do at receiver, where you can line him up as far as different places on offense, what he brings to the table in terms of special teams, I think this guy could be a two-way player. You know, I think you could put him somewhere like safety and he would be absolutely tremendous. But yeah, I had Kendrick on that list. Jeremy Bernard was considered. I like you, Justice Haynes, obviously Tyler Booker, Parker Brailsford. If we were going to include transfers right now, that's probably the guy I would have, even over an LT Overton or someone like that. I'm not sure about you. But roll into the defense for us and talk about maybe some of those guys. Because I think defensive line is kind of one of those positions I was talking about. I didn't have one of those guys on this list, but I think the DL has a chance to be outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I know you had Jahi Campbell in your top five, and I thought long and hard about him too, just because the same thing we said about Deontay Lawson, those guys are going to have opportunities. But yeah, the defensive line – you look at what comes back. Justin Boykbe is a big loss, just because one, it was good to see him back on the field after what he dealt with two seasons ago now. But you do have a ton of guys coming back. I think of a guy like Tim Keenan, who's just that run stopper in the middle of the defensive line. And he's someone, I wrote about it on Monday, which kind of got lost in the shuffle with all the damn news we got. But, you know, President's Day, I always try to do a fun little, like, here's some potential leaders for Alabama. And Tim Keenan and Kendrick Law were both guys that Nick Saban mentioned early when talking about leaders on both sides of the football. And those were kind of unconventional picks from him last year. So I think Tim Keenan is someone that is impactful both on and off the field for this team. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he can do in this new defensive scheme. But I think Keenan, Tim Smith, Jaheim Otis, heck, I'm interested to see some of the other guys like Jamarian Latham. I think he can be someone that flourishes in this scheme. Young guys like James Smith and Jordan Renaud. I think the defensive line, you're right, while losing a guy like Justin Boigbe is significant, they have a lot of guys that got some experience this past year and played really well at times.
Yeah, if we did position groups that are championship caliber today, I'd have the defensive line up there.
Yeah,
I think that's a championship caliber group. I think your inside linebackers that you bring back are championship caliber. Got to answer some questions on the back end. That's where a guy like Damani Jackson, if we were including transfers on this list, I think he could be in that mix for sure. Has experience coming from USC, is can fly, can flat out run. But sure, I think the defensive line for sure, you've got one or two or more guys that could very much be in line for breakout type of seasons in 2024. Hey, Charlie, let's shift gears to some Alabama men's basketball. A big one tonight at Coleman Coliseum. Early tip for Alabama and Florida. Florida playing some great basketball of late, coming in on a bit of a heater. The Gators started SEC play 1-3 and now sit at 8-4 in the league. And so with that game in mind and what awaits Alabama in the next couple of weeks as it closes out regular season play, wanted to get your thoughts on ranking the remainder of the Alabama schedule. From 6-1 we'll go. And this is in terms of difficulty, importance to perhaps winning a third SEC championship under Nate Oates. Let's start right there at number 6. Who do you got in that spot?
It's got to be Arkansas. I mean, Arkansas has been disappointing this year. You know, they're just ahead of Vandy and Missouri in the SEC standings. I think they're 4-9 in SEC play. They did get a win over A&M, though, here of late. So, you know, you give some pause to that.
On the road.
A&M's a tough bunch and really strong in the glass. So, you know, Arkansas is really talented, but they've been really disappointing. So, it was pretty quick to put the Hogs there at number 6.
Yeah, Arkansas at 13-13 overall, even after – that road win over A&M last night, just 3-9 in the league. Road record for the Hogs of 2-5. Now, two of those wins at Missouri and, again, last night at Texas A&M, but I'm with you. I've got Arkansas and Eric Musselman. Disappointing season to this point for the Hogs. They're in the 6th spot. What about number 5, Charlie? Who do you got for us there?
See, this is where it gets tough because I think the rest of the 5 are really difficult games. I don't really want to discount any of them, but I looked at it. I looked at KenPom. I went Ole Miss, the road trip to Ole Miss at number 5. You look at the rest of the games, the teams on the schedule, they're, you know, among the top, you know, 6 in the conference, kind of the contenders there for that SEC regular season crown. And Ole Miss is kind of on the outside looking in. I know the game's on the road, but for me, it's just I had to slot them at number 5 just because I think Kentucky, Florida, and Tennessee are better.
I went Ole Miss at number 5 as well. Heading into tonight's matchup with Mississippi State on the road, the Rebels sit at 19-6 and 6-6 in the league. You know, the thing for Alabama that you worry about is it's the back end of a 2-game roadie that starts with the trip to Lexington coming up this weekend. And the Rebels are 14-1 at home. The lone loss this season on its home court for Ole Miss came to Auburn. The Rebels did beat Florida by 18 in Oxford back in January. So I'm with you. It's still going to be a tough game. As you said, I don't think any of these 6 or any of these 5 that we're going to talk about are going to be particularly easy. But I, too, went with Ole Miss there in the five spot. Number four, Charlie, who do you got there?
This felt wrong, I'll admit, but I'm going with tonight's game. You get the Gators twice in these last six games. For me, going down to Gainesville is a little more difficult because Florida, I think playing Texas A&M before this game against Florida is big because Alabama, you know, had a tough time on the glass against the Aggies. And I think Texas A&M is second, or Texas A&M is first in the country in offensive rebounding rate, and Florida's second. So it's a good precursor to what to expect from a physical Florida team that's good on the glass. But Florida's also really good offensively. You know, Alabama has the nation's number one offense. I think Florida's 10th when you look at KenPom. So it's going to be probably a lot of scoring tonight. Alabama's going to have to be good from a rebounding standpoint. But Nate Oates said it yesterday. Florida's also going to have to guard Alabama's guards because it doesn't sound like he's going to change from that smaller lineup he goes with Grant Hill at the five. We know Florida's going to have some size inside with a couple of the 6'10", 7'1" guys. So it's going to be a little bit of a different styled matchup. But with it being at home, I had to go four just because you got a couple of road games out there ahead of it.
Yeah, under Todd Golden, Florida's committed to that two-post type of approach. So stylistically, going to be very interesting. Both these teams, though, very efficient offensively, as you outlined. So should be plenty of points at Coleman Coliseum on Wednesday night. The Gators 3-4 on the road this season. They do have road wins at Kentucky and Georgia here of late. I think they're 2-1 in their last three on the road. So I've got Florida as well there in the four spot. This is where it gets tricky, too, because you still, from what we're picking from, have a couple of road games to go along with a home matchup against Tennessee in these final three games that we're going to talk about. So with that, who do you have at three, Charlie?
I have the road trip to Lexington, and we talked about it last week with Clint. I think Alabama matches up a little bit better with Kentucky than, say, Florida and Tennessee. I think Florida and Kentucky are kind of risers here of late. I think Florida's won three in a row. Kentucky's won two in a row. So I think that Kentucky is good offensively too. I think they're actually ahead of Florida. When you look at offensive efficiency, I think they're eighth nationally. So that could be another high scoring game. And, you know, Rupp's a tough place to play. But, as we mentioned last week, they had some struggles early, or not early, but middle of the season at home. So for me, I think it's going to be difficult, but it finishes at three for me, that road trip to Lexington.
Damn it, Charlie. We're almost like for like, I'm thinking on this, because I, too, have Kentucky on the road in that three spot. It's crazy to think, but Kentucky is just 1-3 in its last four home games. Yep. And that was after a three-game losing streak, getting a home win over Ole Miss here a week or so ago. But you're right. You get the sense that maybe after that road win at Auburn, Cal and his team have found something. No doubt a very talented team.
Yeah.
But a team that I think Florida kind of falls into this boat too. The concern you have for both Florida and Kentucky against this Alabama team is that you might think you want to get into a game north of 85 points with Alabama, but I don't know if that's really the case. I do have Kentucky as well there at number three on our list. Number two, Charlie, on our list of ranking the remaining games on the Alabama men's basketball schedule. Who do you got there in that two spot?
Maybe this is where we don't share the same opinion. I went with the trip to Florida. But it's the same thing we just talked about. Florida is good on the glass, but it being on the road makes it more difficult when you kind of preface the rankings that way. It's no surprise Tennessee is number one because of the earlier matchup this season and the way that they kind of shellacked Alabama. I just think Tennessee matches up well against Alabama. They have that big and Adu, who is a problem. We've seen Alabama have consistent problems with bigs. Dalton connects really good. They have good guards, experienced guards. So it was hard not to pick Tennessee, even though it was at home in the one spot. But I do think that road trip to Florida, you know, people look at the schedule. They see Tennessee on there. They see the Gators a couple times. I don't think that people maybe envisioned this trip to Florida on March the 5th being as difficult as it may be. But that could be – When I think when we ranked it, that's, or we kind of broke down the over under on remaining wins for Alabama. That feels like a potential loss when you look at the remaining schedule. So that one's going to be a tough trip. Yeah, it's tough not to pick Tennessee at one.
Yeah, I went Florida to the road trip. Gators are 11-1 at home this season, and that loss was to Kentucky in a really good game back in, I think, January.
Yeah.
So they're on one right now in a couple of different ways are the Gators. And this game at Florida for Alabama is going to come on a Tuesday night after the Tennessee game in Tuscaloosa. So it's going to be a short turnaround from Tennessee, I believe, is a primetime game, I want to say, on that Saturday. And then go to Gainesville, which is always a weird trip, or seems to have been a weird trip for Alabama basketball. But Alabama has won three of its last four down in Gainesville. And that's a place that I'm able to recall from about 1996 to 2014, about a stretch of 20 years. It was a house of horrors going down to what used to be the O'Connell Center there in Gainesville for Alabama men's hoops. But Nate, I think even Avery have kind of turned that around here of late. So it is. It's a weird trip, but I still went with Tennessee in the top spot because the memories of Alabama just not losing decisively, not just that in Knoxville in the earlier matchup, Charlie, but getting big boyed in a lot of ways. And, you know, I can kind of attribute some of that. If you haven't seen Tennessee, if you haven't seen a Rick Barnes team and the physicality that comes with that 1-5, it can be a little bit of a shock to your system. So when you think about Aaron Estrada and Grant Nelson and Latrell Wrightsell and, you know, this revamped roster for Alabama, I can understand that to an extent. But, you know, Tennessee has sort of the kryptonite for a team like Alabama. We talked about that here on the show, too. One of the biggest things about Nate Oates' teams is that he finds a way to stay old. They've done it with this team, but you know what Tennessee is too? They're old.
Yeah.
Tennessee is old. So you lose some of that advantage that you have maybe against some of these other teams that Alabama has faced.
No, I mean, Tennessee is a veteran group. I mean, Viscovi feels like he's been there since those 90s that you're talking about at Florida. But no, it's, I think Alabama will be much better against Tennessee because, like you said, they've seen it. It's going to be at home. Heck, you look at Alabama's trip to Knoxville last season, it wasn't a very good showing. So Alabama's been able to turn around and respond after seeing those Rick Barnes teams a second time. But, yeah, it just kind of goes back to what we've talked about throughout the year, that lack of a consistent rim protector. If they had a Charles Bediako, which I know that's beating a dead horse and fans don't want to hear it, but I think Alabama would fare much better against Tennessee. But, you know, I think maybe this kind of jolt that a guy like Nick Pringle has gotten of late could be beneficial. I think Grant Nelson's experience inside here the last month plus can be beneficial, and Alabama's playing really well at home too. I think that's it. Being at home was the toughest thing given the road trips that Alabama has left on the schedule, but you know that the 20-point loss is hard to ignore. I don't think it'll be that by any stretch of the imagination in round two, but it's going to be tough.
And with Tennessee, a lot of it goes back to how is the game called.
Yeah,
you know, if Tennessee's allowed to get up into your guards and really get their hands on them and, you know, force you off the three-point line, we know that's what Tennessee's going to do. They're going to get up into Alabama and say, you're not getting open clean looks from three. If you can beat us at the rim and the whistle doesn't go your way as much as you'd like, then all the best to you. But it is interesting because these teams haven't played in Tuscaloosa in more than 2 years. You know, it was, I think, late December 2021, the last time the Vols visited Coleman Coliseum. And that alone, that home court advantage that Alabama has flexed here under Nate Oates is a reason why I almost put the road trip to Florida ahead of Tennessee on this list. Because, yeah, I think stylistically and in terms of matchups, it's not a good one for Alabama with Tennessee. But just like you can't ignore, we can't ignore that loss earlier in the season in Knoxville. It's hard to ignore what Alabama basketball has done. It's really flown under the radar in a lot of ways because we hear so much about Auburn and Rupp and all these other places And then when you put it in front of people, you put it on paper, pretty damn amazing what Alabama's done on its home floor.
Yeah, they've won, I think it's up to 15 straight SEC home games at Coleman, which I think is the longest for the program since 88. So, yeah, they built quite a home court advantage. And look, the non-conference schedule from a home standpoint wasn't great. So early in the season, it was, you know, you had some duds of crowds. We heard what Jay Williams said about the tennis court or tennis match, whatever he said. But here of late in SEC play, the fans have shown out. And really the students deserve a lot of credit. I think they should get even closer to the floor because they're there before I'm even in the building, it feels like sometimes. So it's been good for Alabama. And, you know, I think that they will fare better at home, but, you know, we'll see if they can kind of respond to what's been a trend and a negative one for this team going against a potent big and a team like Tennessee that matches up well.
Yeah, going to take everything Crimson Chaos has and then some. And you're right, man. That student section has elevated itself to among the very best in all of college basketball. As we get out of here, Charlie, I'd be remiss if we didn't recognize our guy Bend Over here because he has been the topic of conversation on the roundtable and beyond. And yes, we get it. If you're just now seeing Bend Over here on the show, he's been here from the start. So where you been? Ben's been here forever. I guess at this point, Charlie, I guess you could say we're leaning in to Bend Over. I don't know if that was the best way to go out. But as always, we appreciate everybody tuning in. We've got plenty of stuff for you there at BamaOnline.com. Baseball and softball, Charlie, cranking up and both perfect on the young season. Some not so good news for baseball, though. Wanted to hit on this. Riley Quick, who looked to be a weekend kind of guy for this pitching staff, and Rob Vaughn in his first season at the helm, didn't want to hear that on Tuesday, right?
No, just three innings pitched. Looked good. Saturday start against Manhattan College with five strikeouts. But, yeah, he's undergoing Tommy John surgery. And Rob Vaughn talked about that after the game last night, how that sucks for Riley, but they're going to have some players to step up. But you know, he's a guy that played well last year, more of a reliever role. And you know, I think he came up before the season opener, Riley did. And you just talked about how he's changed a lot in his game, worked really hard with JJ this offseason. So to see that happen this early in the year, that's a bummer. Not only just for the baseball team, which you said is 4-0, but for a guy that seems to have a really bright future. So you never want to hear that, but you know, maybe Alabama will have some arms to step up now.
I mean, Tommy John injuries have become like high ankle sprains, it seems like, with baseball pitchers. It's almost like you can't really move forward with your career until you undergo Tommy John. It's been crazy. It's unfortunate, as you said, first and foremost for Riley, and then certainly for the Alabama baseball team as a whole. Hey, Charlie, as always, appreciate you taking the time to join us right here on the YouTube home for BamaOnline.com. Always great stuff. I know you're doing some positional stuff for us where football is concerned, but anything breaking, anything newsworthy, Charlie Potter is all over it for us at BamaOnline.com. Thanks a lot, Charlie.
Yeah, no problem. I set up that series because thinking February would be kind of chill. What was I thinking, right? Yeah, so now it's just extra work at this point.
I've done that before. I've made that mistake myself many moons ago, but good stuff from Charlie with us. Subscribe to BamaOnline.com. Join us on the roundtable. You got Charlie, you got Tim Watch, you got Andrew Bone, you got Joseph Hastings, Clint Lamb, Jimmy Stein, myself. We're all hanging out with you at BOL. And of course, again, subscribe to our YouTube channel right here for BOL as well. For Charlie Potter, Travis Ryer, thanking you for joining us. And until next time, so long, everybody.